to Ballistic Radio, the fastest growing gun talk show in the country. Join us. We're going to explore the topics of firearms, self-defense, and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you need dynamite to take them off. Now, here's your host, John Johnston, on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me this evening, the very voyeuristic Andy Ulrich. Andy, how's it going?
Pretty good.
See, Andy was taking my photo as I was introducing him, so I thought I would give you an extra title tonight.
It will be posted.
Oh, I'm sure it will. I've got my sunglasses on because I wanted to feel extra cool, kid.
The aviators.
Hey, I like them too. The new Oakley ballistic rated aviators. So
nice, very nice.
Yes, enjoying them very, very much so far. I probably will post a review of them at some point or another up on the webpage when I get around to it, which, knowing me, will be in a while. A very long while. So anyway, joining us this evening is going to be Claude Werner, the tactical professor. We're going to be discussing gunfight analysis, which I think should be interesting for almost everybody, just because so many people talk about what happens or doesn't happen in a gunfight, and the numbers or things that they say, they're just kind of pulling out of their lower orifice. Rectal
extraction.
Yes, yes. Something. I wasn't even going to get that in depth, but that was a bad pun too. Anyway, quick update on the FNS9 long slide test gun. Hit 5,000 rounds, and I have not had any problems since we created a single sided mag release. Since I hit 5,000 rounds with it, I've given it to Blackfire Ordnance Group, which sponsors the show, and they are going to do some interesting things to it, and we're going to evaluate the gun at that point and see if there's any ways we can make it more fun to shoot. Not that it's not fun, but hey, it could always be more fun. Other than that, upcoming, I'm going to be shooting with Robert Vogel this week, which should be very, very cool because as good as I like to think I am sometimes, I'm not very good at all, especially when Robert's shooting. Last time I was up there, man, he ran an El Presidente, I want to say, in like 4.6.
Humbling.
Cold. Yeah, extremely humbling. So other than that, just a quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Colt. Colt, the legend continues. Without further ado, we've got about 6 minutes left. Let's get Claude Werner on the line. Joining us this evening, the tactical professor, Claude Werner. Claude, how are you doing tonight?
I'm living the dream. How about you, John?
Oh, I'm, I could say that myself, actually. So, now, you've been on the show before back when I really didn't know what I was doing, and that's been about a year now, I want to say, since you've been on. So for those who have forgotten, or those who are maybe not familiar with you, can you discuss your background real quick? Just introduce yourself.
Well, I'm a retired Army officer. Spent a fair amount of time in the special operations community. What's probably germane to our discussion tonight is the fact that I did a fair amount of work military intelligence-wise, which was not basically human source intelligence, you know, the spy guy stuff, but rather it was order of battle and intelligence preparation of the battlefield, which is a lot more appropriate to what we're going to talk about tonight.
Right.
And, you know, I taught at the Rogers Shooting School, the elite Rogers Shooting School.
Yes.
And some people say I'm pretty good with a snub.
That's an understatement to say the least. Speaking of the Rogers Shooting School, there's actually some history made there. This last private class they had two people that shot the test perfect. Very, very much congratulations to Manny Bragg and also Gabe White, who managed to do it from concealment. Clean.
Mm-hmm. Well,
which is
excellent achievement on both their parts.
Yeah.
Only been done twice before,
right.
And I give them both a pat on the back for it.
Yeah, and it was actually very sad. I was invited to that class and just could not attend, and I'm really kind of kicking myself because I would have liked to have seen both of that. But anyway, so Going back to the topic tonight, we're going to talk about gunfight analysis. And for those that are maybe not familiar with what we mean when we say that, what do we mean when we say that?
Well, I actually break, I call it incident analysis because I have a whole paradigm that I use about armed encounters, shootings, gunfights, and gun battles. But basically what we're talking about is the idea of looking at incidents, you know, to the extent that we can gather the information that actually happen, and then try to figure out what went on in it. You know, I go into it in a lot of depth. I created little dioramas and so forth, but, you know, people don't really need to do that to get the benefit out of it. And then what I try to do is I take that information about the actual incidents and I analyze it for commonalities and trends.
Okay.
And, you know, and this is all, you know, as my colleague Tom Gibbons says, there's no such thing as an average gunfight,
right,
which is definitely true. But, you know, they tend to fit a bell curve just like a lot of things.
Okay.
And so, you know, from my perspective, then I try to look at what are the commonalities of it, you know, which are sometimes are the simple things like distances and number of rounds fired and effective rounds on target and so forth. But I also like to look at it in a broader sense of, you know, tactics, which I break out tactics as having several subcomponents, you know, the principle being positioning, maneuver, and communication.
Okay.
And how does that all fit into what the outcome was?
All right. So in, I guess in studying this and finding out the commonalities and just seeing some of the tactics that are utilized, what's the end goal of that? Just to kind of see where we maybe should be spending our time, or?
Well, for one thing, John, what I've really found interesting about this is that in many cases, truth is stranger than fiction. You know, some of the incidents that I've read, I looked at it and I said, I could not dream this up in a million years that this was going to happen. You know, not only the end result, but what led up to it.
Right.
And in a lot of cases, that's what's really valuable to me is, well, what were the pre-incident conditions that caused this to happen? Because, you know, as you know, as private citizens, what we really want to be able to do is avoid the whole thing entirely.
Right.
So, you know, if we can see some thread of, well, you know, this happens quite a bit and then it leads to shooting, is there a way for us to avoid this happens quite a bit?
Yeah.
And then the next thing that I take out of it is I start defining my doctrine based on what those probabilities are, as opposed to, you know, I was on a gun forum a while back and somebody said, they were talking about shotguns, and they said, you have to consider the possibility of needing to provide covering fire while dragging wounded friendlies to cover, or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, when has that ever actually happened, you know, out, you know, in the United States to a private citizen?
Right.
You know, so I wanted to find, you know, because as you know, training time and resources are limited.
Yeah.
And I try to put, you know, my efforts into the things that are most likely to happen. And then if I've got time and resources left over, then I'll start worrying about the ends of the bell curve.
Perfect.
But if I haven't covered the middle, you know, I feel I'm sort of setting myself up for failure.
Right. And I'd actually like to discuss that just a little bit more, but it is time for the commercial break. When we get back, more with the tactical professor about that bell curve he was just talking about. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group, makers of TNT and TNT Black. Firearms finishes so tough, you need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online, blackfireordgroup.com. Anyway, just a quick reminder, this segment brought to you by Walther and the new PPX. Anyway, before the break, we were discussing with Claude Werner where maybe we should be spending our training time based off of analyzing some things that are common in shootings. Anyway, Claude, are you still there?
I am still here.
So you were discussing the bell curve, and you tend to see a trend in commonalities between certain incidents. Do you mind discussing that a little bit?
Well, and let me say about that, John, that, you know, I look at a lot of incidents, both law enforcement and private citizens.
Right.
You know, and those have very, well, I won't say very, but they have different characteristics to them. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of times we in the training community don't take in account, that, you know, we a lot of times try to impose what's a military context or a law enforcement context onto a private citizen's context. And, you know, a lot of times it's a square peg in a round hole to me. So,
right.
You know, when I think about these in terms of trends, and many times the trends are local, and that's why I think people ought to look at what's going on in their community, because, you know, if you take a very vehicular-oriented city like Atlanta, where I live,
yeah,
you know, the trends there may be rather different than they are in, say, you know, New York or one of the older cities up north, where there's a lot more pedestrian traffic. And then similarly, you know, out in Los Angeles or Las Vegas, which is, you know, an interesting place to me,
yeah,
that once again, those they may have a different set of characteristics as well, because of the nature of the criminal element, the physical surroundings, and so forth. So I think it's important for people to look at what's in their area, and in some cases, where they're going to, because, you know, obviously we travel and things may be different.
Right, right. So I want to backtrack just a little bit, because it was interesting to me that you mentioned the context of the information that we're looking at and where it's coming from. But something that I thought was rather intriguing that I picked up at the Tom Givens instructor class that I attended last year, he started talking about the bias that different instructors have based off of their background. Do you think overall that's just something that maybe people should be thinking about a little bit more, is the context of the information and also the context of the training they receive?
Oh, absolutely. You know, there's no doubt about that. And there's no way for any of us as instructors to avoid the fact that we have our biases. You know, we're all victims of our own experience.
Right.
So I think it is, that's a good point that you make, that it's very important for people to look and see where is any given instructor coming from, and then how much of that will apply to that student's personal experience.
Right.
You know, and I think there's something to be gained from everybody. It's just that I think the students have to be cautious about, well, where is this coming from, and does that context fit me completely, does it fit me partially, or does it not fit me at all?
Right, right. And it's interesting, too, because you are known online as kind of the, and I apologize for the term because it's not accurate, but the mouse gun dude.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I'm the rogue. I'm the first to admit it.
Well, and it's funny, too, because I've, for whatever reason, you've started to rub off on me, and I've been catching flack for saying that you might be right in certain contexts. But the thing that I think that people miss is that as you're talking about, for instance, carrying a small pocket gun and things like that, you're saying that or suggesting that based off of the situation that most people find themselves in, correct?
Exactly.
Okay.
You know, now, would I tell, you know, a member of a SWAT team that he should carry a 22 pocket gun? Certainly not.
Right.
You know, his needs are very different. But, you know, you take the need of
businessmen, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or especially women, you know, their lifestyle and their, if you will, carrying resources,
mm-hmm.
you know, clothes in particular, are so different than men. And a lot of times we just don't pick up on that, you know, a lot of women don't wear belts.
Yeah.
You know, they don't, and they don't want to wear a belt. Mm-hmm. Well, then you say, well, you got to carry a 9mm double stack gun, and it's going to require a belt that's an inch and a quarter thick. And they're like, ain't doing it, dude. So
right.
What they end up carrying is nothing. And ultimately, that's what I was trying in my proponency, if you will, of the mouse gun, yeah, is the idea that, you know, a 22 in hand is a lot better than a 9mm that you ain't got.
Well, and that's interesting you mentioned that, too, because there was a large discussion that occurred on the show's Facebook page where I asked the question of whether or not people thought that, as a whole, today's trainers were unintentionally discouraging people from not carrying at all based off of the recommendations for carry guns that they gave. You'd have thought that I started setting fires to puppies and kittens making that suggestion. But it was interesting, though, to see the people that responded and how many people hadn't even ever thought of it before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I've been saying that for quite a while, that in the end, if you tell people that the only gun that's worth carrying is bigger than something that they'll carry on a regular basis, well, then what you're telling them is to not carry a gun.
Right, right. And, it's nice because I get to talk to you and I get to talk to other people in the industry, so I get to steal all these ideas from my betters and then suggest them, maybe say them a little bit differently, and all of a sudden people think I'm smarter than I am. But... We'll move forward a little bit. Just as far as gathering information, and, you know, you were talking about some of the things that, well, I asked you actually about the bell curve and things like that. What are some commonalities that you see, just real quick, and then we'll move forward a little bit?
Well, one of the things that I have been struck with in both looking at private citizen shootings and law enforcement shootings is how often one well-placed shot is the end of the situation.
Okay.
Now, that's not necessarily to say that the shootee, you know, the criminal, dies from it, which we don't really care. I mean,
right,
we're not out to kill the person. We just want them to stop what they're doing. But
and that bears repeating, because I think many people get hung up on that. But
that's right, exactly.
Continue,
a lot
please.
Of people get hung up on the difference between lethality and, you know, what Rob Pincus describes as combat effectiveness.
Right.
You know, and ultimately, if, you know, the guy stops what he's doing,
good enough.
I don't care if he dies or not. It's just, I want you to stop doing what you're criminally doing.
Would that be persuasion through perforation,
something like that?
There you go. that's a good one. I like that.
And I'd carry a phaser set to stun if that's I mean, that'd be great.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm all for it, you know.
Yeah.
So at any rate, that's one of the things that I was just really very I have to admit, I'm surprised, have been surprised. And when I first started doing this, 2000 was the first time I tried to do, you know, a fairly scientific study, and it has a lot of holes, and I admit, but, you know, at the time it was about the best I could do given the information I had.
Right.
The thing that I was very surprised about was the, what I call the one-shot lethality of 22s.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I had expected, you know, and as you know, I've used 22s for personal protection for a long time.
Right.
So I had expected that they would be effective, you know, reasonably. What I had not expected was the fact that 34% of the time, one shot from a 22 resulted in an instant death of, you know, the criminal.
Right.
That surprised me. It really did. You know, and so as I continue to go through these things, there are things like that surprise me. And one of them is that even within the police community, you know, we hear so much about, you know, the famous incident that the Illinois State Police encountered where the guy soaked up 34 rounds of 9mm soft points,
yeah,
and everybody points to that. Well, that just doesn't happen too much anymore.
No.
In fact, I'm really hard-pressed to come up with too many incidents where there's more than two shots required to put the guy down with a good 9mm hollow point.
Well,
you know that.
And it's funny because, you know, I've highlighted stuff like I had Jared Reston on the show talking about one of his shootings, and that would fall outside of what you're talking about. But the reason why I had him on the show was because of how unusual that was. You know,
mm-hmm,
for someone
mm-hmm
to get shot in the face with a .45 and then go on to kill their attacker, and just how many rounds were fired between both and how many were good, solid hits for the most part. the whole reason that I brought that up is just to show the outliers. But pretty much you're saying that most of the time, not many shots fired.
Yeah, you know, out of the latest NYPD reports that are they're online from 2012,
right.
There were 16 incidents that resulted in the criminal's death in 2012. One of those required three shots.
Yeah.
The others were all either one or two shots and boom, 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 you know, and so, you know, I think that's something that in the choice of weapon, you know, that having a single stack 9mm, I just don't consider that a disadvantage. Really don't.
Well, and I think that, and we've only got about 15 seconds left, so I'm going to say something and then let everyone think about it during the break. I think that 99.9% of the time, if you're armed with anything, as much as I like to make fun of certain brands, calibers, or whatever, you'll probably be fine. So,
mm-hmm.
But anyway, we'll talk about that some more. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. Presented by Black Fire Ordnance Group. Makers of firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Bear, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium ARs. Whether you are looking to protect yourself or are a first-time gun buyer or even a competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for Sig parts and accessories. So, if you would like to get on the line with either myself, Andy, or the tactical professor, Claude Werner, you can call in 1-800-823-8255. We'll try and get to your calls at the end of the show. Right now, no one on the line, but we'll see what happens. Anyway, back with Claude. Claude, are you still there?
Still am.
Perfect. So, before the break, I had said something along the lines of, most of the time, if you have a firearm, no matter what caliber it is, what kind of firearm it is, it will probably be fine. Now, that's not to say that, and I'll break this into two parts, that's not to say that if you're able to carry something, and I'm doing rabbit ears around this, larger and or more effective, that you shouldn't. And it's also not to say that you should plan on your violent encounter being typical. Would you say?
Absolutely. And you know, like I tell people, although it's not uncommon for me to, you know, to carry a 22, you know, the gun by my bed is a 9mm Beretta with a 20-round magazine. You know?
Right.
So, you know, because they're at home, the size and the weight and so forth are not an issue. But, you know, so it's not like I'm against it. It's just I think that we have to tailor ourselves to the mission. You know, and the big part of the mission is to be armed.
Right, right. So, and I think too that something that tends to happen, and I believe it's probably just because we like to naturally break ourselves into camps and or you know, as Morgan Atwood from BFE Labs would say, tribes. And whoever's not doing things the way we do them is obviously wrong. And I'd like to see that attitude maybe change just a little bit, because honestly, it gets old after a little while.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why I like looking at, you know, the databases. And now, the thing is, John, that now we have an amount of information available online, open source, that we just didn't have years ago.
Yeah, there's a couple different websites that you can go to that have pretty accurate accounts of things like that, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we've got, you know, the FBI has led, you know, the game in that for many years with their law enforcement officers killed and assaulted report, which it's interesting that in every police class that I teach, I ask the officers, well, how many of you have read L-E-O-K-A. And almost all the hands will go up. And then I ask, well, how many of you read the summaries, which are the individual narratives of the officers that were killed, you know, describing how it happened and so forth? And when I ask them that, the hands almost universally go down. And that's a mistake, because when we're talking about incident analysis, we're not talking about all that tabular data that gets generated. Because in a lot of cases, you know, that's where that whole concept of the average gunfight and, you know, what's the middle of the bell curve and so forth, that's where that comes from. I don't think that's particularly helpful, and certainly from the standpoint of developing our tactics, you know, tabular data is just not that useful.
Right.
Because so often you hear that thing quoted about the FBI says the average distance of a gunfight is, and actually there's very little information in the FBI data about it, and the information that is actually the unsuccessful gunfights. So, you know, that's a problem. And so I think in all of these different sources, you know, LAPD, Chicago, NYPD, the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department, Philadelphia started putting theirs online, that we have to read those individual incidents. You know, now,
right.
Some of them are voluminous. I mean, you know, Las Vegas and LAPD, you know, each one of the incidents has, you know, anywhere from 6 to as many as 50 pages of data online. And I don't expect people to read that. But if nothing else, what people should read if they're going to talk about this and be knowledgeable about it is at least look at what their incident summary is, because usually that will only be a few paragraphs. And in many cases, you know, with the police ones, I like to see, well, what is the reason for police contact? And especially for the incidents where we can break out when the officer was off duty, is very important. And that's almost always stated, you know,
yeah,
that the officer was off duty. Because off-duty officers are largely in the same boat that we are as private citizens.
Right.
You know, they're not out there trying to take enforcement action. Something just happened to them. Somebody tried to break into their house, or somebody tried to mug them, or whatever. Well, the difference between their response in that and ours is very small. And so there's a lot of learning experience in there. And so that's the sort of thing that I think people ought to take a look at and try to, you know, get some clues about how do things develop, what were the tactics that the officer used. And then, you know, usually there'll be some kind of board of police commissioners or independent police review authority or something like that, and they will talk about, this is our judgment of what the officer did right, and in some cases what the officer did wrong.
Right.
And, you know, so there's some very good lessons from people who are used to doing these analyses, you know, essentially as their full-time job.
Right. And something to point out, too, that you mentioned, and I think it bears repeating, especially when you're looking at the FBI, the LEOCA reports and all that, is that is unsuccessful gunfights in the regards that someone was injured and or killed, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, the summaries are all about the officers that were killed.
Right.
It's actually interesting in the tabular data that there's a table that talks about the different types of weapons that are used to assault officers, not kill them, but assault them,
Yeah. And
what the injury rate is. And actually, oddly enough, firearms are relatively speaking, the lowest category of injury.
Hmm.
As opposed to knives and, you know, what the FBI describes as personal weapons, which are, you know, hands and feet and
right,
so forth. And so to me, that puts, if you will, puts the lie to the concept that all gunfights occur within 5 feet, because, you know, if all gunfights occurred within 5 feet, we'd probably expect the injury rate to be close to 100%, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and
yeah,
especially for people that were not wearing armor and all that.
Right.
And
whereas, you know, actually, it's about 10%.
Right.
So, you know, something's not, you know, not matching up in there, but nobody talks about that.
What do you think that is, just real quick, or do you have a...
Well, actually, so then if you look at the The larger narratives from, say, LAPD and especially Las Vegas is very voluminous in their reports, too. The truth of the matter is most police gunfights take place at extended distances.
Right.
And so at those distances, then, that horrible, point shooting technique with the gun held up in the air, it doesn't work that well.
I'm pretty okay with the bad guys using that point shooting.
Oh, absolutely! I'm all for it. I think if we ought to teach them to do that.
We do. It's called movies and video games. Anyway, continue.
And it's interesting you say that because, my colleague Tom Givens made a very interesting comment in his trainer interview that I did. I did that series of trainer interviews for Atlanta Firearms Examiner, and he said, almost all the training that people have nowadays comes from the media, and it's almost all bad.
Right.
And that's another thing that by doing this incident analysis, we can look at it and sort of countervene that those bad influences and say, it looks like things happen this way when I watch them on Criminal Minds or CSI, but then when I read the LAPD database, it's a whole lot different.
Right. And I think something else that maybe should be noted, too, is that, if we're speaking of gunfights and we're speaking of gunfights happening at extended ranges, there is a world of difference between a gunfight and a shooting where, officers are exchanging rounds with someone else versus they're shooting someone at close range, and that ends the situation entirely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely true.
So we'll kind of move forward. So other than police reports and gathered statistics that way, what are some maybe sources that are easy for lazier listeners to look at if they want to examine, what happens in these shootings and gunfights?
Well, I'll admit that my favorite is the Armed Citizen column from the NRA Publications. Mm-hmm. Which is also available online. Even if people aren't members of the NRA, they can search for the Armed Citizen on the internet, and eventually they'll end up, I believe it's on the NRA ILA website.
Right.
A lot of people in my industry have said, well, the NRA cherry picks those and tries to present the positive side of it. And perhaps that's true. But when I first got interested in this, like I say, it was about 12 years ago, I actually ran, and I'm probably the only geek in the industry who would do this, I ran 5 RSS feeds on news reports trying to gather every single incident that was ever reported in the news. I had like armed robbery, murder, self-defense, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
And this all fed, into my feed every day, and I looked at it. And for the most part, I have to say that although it's cherry-picked, the armed citizen is not really that far off from what really happens. So I would encourage people to just, if you don't do anything else, you can go to that site. Every month you'll get about 5 or 6 different reports, that are summarized, so you don't even have to read the original article.
Right.
Then you also have, now there are a few aggregated websites where, where they're bringing in those reports and putting them in one place.
Yeah.
Gun Saves Lives, which I write for, is the one that comes to mind, but it's not the only one.
And I like to share those statuses on Facebook when the interesting ones pop up in my timeline. So it's just because there's a lot of really, I think, telling information that's displayed there. Now, we've got to go to break again, but when we get back, we'll talk a little bit more with Claude Werner. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, presented by Blackfire Ordnance Group. Makers of TNT and TNT Black, firearms finishes so tough you'd need dynamite to take them off. Visit them online, blackfireordgroup.com. This segment brought to you by the Polypalooza 2 Memorial Training Conference. Join some of the top trainers in the country August 16th and 17th at the Raven Concealment System facility in Northern Ohio, where they will be teaching some of the most vital self-defense skills that every armed citizen should know. Lesson blocks will cover a myriad of topics suitable for shooters and students of all skill levels. All skill levels. For more information, click the Polypalooza 2 tab on ballisticradio.com. Registration is only $250, and all of the money is going to benefit the Paul Gomez Children's Trust. Remember, click the Polypalooza tab on the ballisticradio.com homepage for more information and save the date, August 16th and 17th. So anyway, we were discussing gunfight analysis with Claude Werner, the tactical professor. Claude, are you still there?
Still here.
And you're actually going to be teaching up at the Polypalooza training conference, aren't you?
I am.
So if anyone likes what you're saying right now or doesn't like what you're saying right now, they can go talk to you about it up there.
Absolutely. They can, and I welcome discussion about this because I don't think I have all the answers. And in fact, I start out with a lot of my presentations and saying, I'm not going to give you the answers. I'm just going to present you questions that, you need to answer on your own.
Right.
And, and this is one of those things, getting back to a little bit to what we talked about earlier, people have to figure out on their own what applies to them out of all this kind of information, because there is so much information available now that just wasn't before.
Right, right. And I think that, and once again, going, and I know that I've said this in the past and whatever, but I really think that the important thing is to create an environment where people can have differing points of view. And instead of it turning into an echo chamber where you've got one side saying the same thing over and over again and the other side saying the same thing over and over again, there can actually be an exchange of ideas and people can change their minds about things if they decide to do that.
The former being known as dueling monologues,
yes,
and the latter being known as a dialogue. And
right.
I agree with you 100%. Dialogue is not something we've been particularly good at in the firearms community, especially on topics like this.
Right, right. I mean, and just for instance, too, and I've said this before, I've said it to you before, I don't actually necessarily agree to the conclusions that you come to as far as what makes you decide, okay, I'm going to carry a pocket gun, and I feel okay with that. But I can't argue with the numbers that you're using. And honestly, I think that my point of view in the past was a little too rigid and did not make enough allowances for people that were maybe in a different situation than I am, as someone that's, 6'2" and 250 pounds and can literally carry one, two, or three guns and conceal them pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something that everyone should think about, especially as they listen to these shows or maybe read some things online, is that, the saying that you don't know what you don't know really applies to everybody, myself
mm-hmm.
included. Almost, I'm sure anyone listening to this as well. So anyway, I'll get off my soapbox about that. Now, we were talking about whether or not the Armed Citizen column was cherry-picked or, whether or not it accurately represents things as they occur. Now, and I didn't really talk to you about this before the show, and I meant to, but are you familiar with the recent one with the Fort Worth, the woman that was defending her auction house with a .22 caliber rifle and was killed? Did you see that pop up?
Mm-mm.
Well, anyway, it's on the shooting incidents in the news thread on pistolforum.com, which is an excellent place to hang out and mostly have discussions with people as opposed to dueling monologues. But it was interesting to me because we don't really know what happened, because the only thing that was discovered was this woman was dead next to her empty rifle. So used a .22 caliber. The thing that I found really intriguing, though, was that one of the first comments was, well, that just goes to show you should use enough gun. And it struck me as incredibly interesting just because of the amount of information that the news report on this did not provide. And and my response to that was, well, how many times was the bad guy struck with the .22 caliber round, and how many times did it fail?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously there was no answer for that because no one knew. But it just seems like something else that maybe people should think about when they're looking at these reports as far as picking the right information to focus on.
And that's a reason why I like the police reports, John, because, so let's say especially LAPD and Las Vegas Metropolitan PD, they provide a very extensive framework for how they analyze the incidents and the information that they look for. And I think that's important that, you know, that people, when they're gathering this kind of information for, you know, their own use, that they have a framework for thinking about it that in many cases is just not present, and people don't think about it much. And you know, my background is, like I said, my time in MI, that, you know, and there's a lot of that kind of information, you know, on a more theoretical framework note, that there's a lot of military intelligence manuals available online. Oddly enough, the CIA, a lot of their stuff in the CIA library that provides a framework for doing intelligence analysis is, you know, you just download it. It's a PDF file.
Right.
And RAND Corporation is another one that they have, you know, being one of the big consulting groups, they have an awful lot of information on their website, which, once again, is available for free download, you know, via PDF, because I've already been paid by somebody to do it, and they don't care.
Right.
So I think that when people look through this kind of thing, you know, the police reports, and if they care to read some of the background information on how to do that sort of analysis, it's going to tune their mind a little bit in a way where they don't do what you said that was going on in this conversation about the woman with the 22 rifle. Well, we don't know what happened, but here's what we think about it.
Right.
Well, what's wrong with that picture?
Well, and I don't even necessarily think that. I understand why that happens, and I think the issue becomes more of, you know, like you said, unless you've really put a lot of time into thinking about the myriad things that go into, and once again, rabbit ears on Easter, you know.
clever.
No, not actually. A gunfight, it's really easy to focus in on the wrong information, which is why you're saying that maybe you should go and look at some of these ways that the larger organizations analyze information?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it, like I say, it provides a way of thinking about it beyond just, you know, parroting something that they heard, you know, online or in a gun rag or something like that.
Right. And I have to say, I realized when I started writing for a gun magazine that maybe the gun writers didn't know as much as I thought they did, because obviously, since they let me do it, that just kind of brought the rest of the industry down a little bit. And see, that's a bad joke, and I'm probably going to get yelled at for that online, but oh well. Anyway, we've got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes left. So we'll kind of shift gears here a little bit. You've got a new blog that you're running, don't you?
Absolutely. TacticalProfessor.com.
TacticalProfessor.com. So
all one word, TacticalProfessor.com.
Okay, and you just get into more information like this and maybe some other things that people should be thinking about?
And actually, I have there's a separate page on the blog that details all the sources of information that I've been able to uncover, that people are, you know, all they have to do is click on it, and there's a link directly to those databases, and it'll allow them to, you know, I've done the work for them to at least find the original source documents and gives them a way to look at it. And then, you know, every two or three days I pontificate something about what I've found or what I think or whatever, and then, you know, as you say, people are free to tell me that I'm incorrect.
Well, and I honestly think I've learned more from the conversations where I've upset people, and I get to see how they, you know, what at least what their thought process is, that maybe I didn't understand something that would have been helpful for me to understand. So anyway, I really appreciate you coming on the show tonight, Claude. I think that you are a underutilized resource that the community would be very well served in exploring a little bit more. So I'm happy to hear that you've got that blog up and running, and you're posting on that pretty regular.
Absolutely. And tell them to come and see Pauly Palooza.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be up there, so I'm really looking forward to that. But anyway, Claude, you enjoy the rest of your Sunday. I do appreciate it.
All right, John. Good talking to you.
Hey, you too. Be safe. So next week we are going to have Mr. Scott Warren, hopefully, barring any illness, for more in Tactical, also formerly of the FBI hostage rescue team, discussing all sorts of interesting things. Anyway, as always, remember to check us out at ballisticradio.com. and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next Sunday at 7 p.m.